Chapter 8. I walked for 2 days straight without sleeping. I stopped only at streams to drink water. I felt as if somebody was after me. Often my shadow would scare me and cause me to run for miles. Everything felt awkwardly brutal. Even the air seemed to want to attack me and break my neck. I knew I was hungry, but I didn't have the appetite to eat or the strength to find food. I had passed through burnt villages where dead bodies of men, women, and children of all ages were scattered, like leaves on the ground after a storm. Their eyes still showed fear, as if death hadn't freed them from the madness that continued to unfold. I had seen heads cut off by machetes, smashed by cement bricks, and rivers filled with so much blood that the water had ceased flowing. Each time my mind replayed these scenes, I increased my pace. Sometimes I closed my eyes hard to avoid thinking, but the eye of my mind refused to be closed and continued to plague me with images. My body twitched with fear, and I became dizzy. I could see the leaves on the trees swaying, but I couldn't feel the wind. On the third day, I found myself in the middle of a thick forest, standing beneath huge trees whose leaves and branches made it difficult to see the sky. I didn't remember how I'd gotten there. Night was approaching, so I found a suitable tree that wasn't too high to climb. It had weaved branches with another to form something like a hammock. I spent the night in the arms of those trees, between earth and sky. The next morning, I was determined to find my way out of the forest, even though my back ached painfully from sleeping in the trees. On my way, I came to a spring that ran from under a gigantic rock. I sat by it to rest, and there I had eye contact with a huge dark snake that retreated behind a bush. I found a long, strong stick to protect myself as I sat playing with the leaves on the ground to avoid bringing up thoughts that occupied my mind. But my mind continued to torment me, and every effort to clear away the terrible thoughts was in vain. So I decided to walk, tapping the ground with the stick I held. I walked all morning and into the evening, but in the end found myself at the same place where I had slept the previous night. That was when I finally came to accept that I was lost and it was going to take a while to get out of where I was. I decided to make my new home a little bit more comfortable by adding leaves to the weaved branches to make them less hard to sleep on. I walked around to familiarize myself with my vicinity. As I was getting acquainted with my new home, I cleared the dried leaves. Then I took a stick and drew lines on the ground from my sleeping place to the spring where I had met my new neighbor, the snake. There was another one drinking water, and it became motionless upon seeing me. As I went about my business, I heard it crawling away. I drew lines by parting the dried leaves on the ground. These lines helped me from getting lost in between the spring and my sleeping place. After I finished familiarizing myself with the area, I sat down and tried to think about how I was going to get out of the forest, but that didn't go well since I was afraid of thinking. I eventually decided that maybe it was better to be where I was. Even though I was lost and lonely, it was safe for the time being. Along the spring, there were several trees with a ripe fruit that I had never seen. Birds came to eat the strange fruit every morning. I decided to try some of it, since it was the only edible thing around. It was either take the chance and eat this fruit that might poison me or die of hunger. I decided to eat the fruit. I thought if the birds ate it and lived, maybe I could too. The fruit was shaped like a lemon with an outer layer of mixed color of yellow and red. Inside was a crusty, watery, fruity part with a very tiny seed. It smelled like a mixture of ripe mango, orange, and something else that was irresistibly inviting. Hesitantly, I plucked one and took a bite. It didn't taste as good as it smelled, but it was satisfying. I must have had about 12 of them. Afterward, I drank some water and sat waiting for the result. I thought about when Junior and I had visited Kabati and would take walks with our grandfather on paths around the coffee farms by the village. He would point out medicinal leaves and trees whose barks were important medicines. During each visit, Grandfather always gave us a special medicine that was supposed to enhance the brain's capacity to absorb and retain knowledge. He made this medicine by writing a special Arabic prayer on a wale, a slate, with ink that was made of another medicine. The writing was then washed off the slate, and that water, which they called nesi, was put in a bottle. We took it with us and were supposed to keep it a secret and drink it before we started for exams. This medicine worked. During my primary school years and part of my secondary school years, I was able to permanently retain everything that I learned. Sometimes it worked so well that during examinations I could visualize my notes and all that was written on each page of my textbooks. It was as if the books had been imprinted inside my head. This wonder was one of many in my childhood. To this day, I have an excellent photographic memory that enables me to remember details of the day-to-day moments of my life indelibly. I looked around the forest for one of the medicinal leaves that grandfather had said remove poison from the body. I might need it if the fruit I had eaten was poisonous, but I couldn't find the plant. Nothing happened after a couple of hours, so I decided to take a bath. I hadn't had time to take one for a while. My clothes were dirty, my crepes were rotten, and my body was sticky with dirt. When I first threw water on my skin, it became slimy. There was no soap, but in the forest there was an area that had a particular kind of grass that could be used as a substitute. I had learned about this grass during one of the summers when I visited my grandmother. When I squeezed a bunch of the grasses together, they provided foam that left my body with a fresh scent. After I had finished taking a bath, I washed my clothes, or rather soaked and spread them on the grass to dry. I sat naked, cleaning my teeth with sapwood. A deer came by and watched me suspiciously before it went about its affairs. I resisted thinking by listening to the sound of the forest, as songs of birds collided with the shouting of monkeys and the cackle of baboons. By evening, my clothes were still damp, so I put them on so that the heat of my body would dry them faster before nightfall. I was still alive, despite eating the nameless fruit, so I ate some more for dinner. The following morning, I ate some more for breakfast and later for lunch and dinner again. The nameless fruit became my only source of food. The fruit was plentiful, but I knew that sooner or later there would be no more. Sometimes, I felt as if the birds gave me angry looks for eating so much of their food. The most difficult part of being in the forest was the loneliness. It became unbearable each day. One thing about being lonesome is that you think too much, especially when there isn't much else you can do. I didn't like this and I tried to stop myself from thinking, but nothing seemed to work. I decided to just ignore every thought that came to my head because it brought too much sadness. Apart from eating and drinking water and once every other day taking a bath, I spent most of my time fighting myself mentally in order to avoid thinking about what I had seen or wondering where my life was going, where my family and friends were. The more I resisted thinking, the longer the days became, and I felt as if my head was becoming heavier each passing day. I became restless and was afraid to sleep for fear that my suppressed thoughts would appear in my dreams. As I searched the forest for more food and to find a way out, I feared coming in contact with wild animals such as leopards, lions, and wild pigs. So I stayed closer to trees that I could easily mount to hide myself from these animals. I walked as fast as I could, but the more I walked, the more it seemed I was getting deeper into the thickness of the forest. The harder I tried to get out, the bigger and taller the trees became. This was a problem because it got difficult to find a tree that was easy to climb and had suitable branches to sleep in. One evening, as I searched for a tree with a forked branch to sleep in, I heard grunts. I wasn't exactly sure what animals were producing such noisy grunts, but they became louder. I climbed a tree to be safe. As I sat there, a herd of wild pigs came running. It was the first time I had seen wild pigs, and they were huge, all of them. If they stood up, they would all be taller than me. Each had forked teeth extending out of its mouth. As they passed underneath me, one of the biggest pigs stopped and sniffed the air in all directions. It must have sensed my presence. When they were gone, I climbed down, and all of a sudden a couple of enormous pigs came running at me. They chased me for about half a mile as I looked for a tree to climb. Fortunately, I found one that I was able to mount in one jump. The pigs stopped and started charging at the bottom of the tree. They grunted loudly and the rest of the herd came back. They all started charging at the tree and tried to chew the bottom. I climbed higher and higher. After a while, they finally gave up as a cricket started calling for night to commence. My grandmother once told me a story about a notorious hunter of wild pigs, who used magic to transform himself into a wild boar. He would then lead the herd into an open area of the forest, where he would change back into human form, then trap and shoot the pigs. One day during his trickery, a small pig saw the hunter biting a plant that enabled him to return to his human form. The pig told all of its companions what it had seen. The herd searched the forest for the hunter's magic plant and destroyed every single one of them. The next day, the hunter performed his trickery and lured the herd into an opening. But he couldn't find the plant to become human again. The pigs tore him into pieces. Since that day, the wild pigs have distrusted all humans, and whenever they see a person in the forest, they think he or she is there to avenge the hunter. After the pigs had gone and I surveyed the terrain to my satisfaction, I climbed down and continued walking. I wanted to be away from that area before dawn, since I feared that if I stayed, I might run into the wild pigs again. I walked all night and continued during the day. At the beginning of night, I saw owls coming from their hiding places, revolving their eyes and stretching to become familiar with their surroundings and get ready for the night. I was walking very fast but very quietly until I accidentally stepped on the tail of a snake. It started hissing and scuttling toward me. I ran as fast as I could for a long time. When I was 6, my grandfather had inserted a medicine into my skin that protected me from snake bite and enabled me to control snakes. But as soon as I started school, I began to doubt the power of the medicine. After that, I was no longer able to make snakes stop in their tracks until I went by. When I was very little, my father used to say, "If you are alive, there is hope for a better day and something good to happen. If there is nothing good left in the destiny of a person, he or she will die." I thought about these words during my journey, and they kept me moving, even when I didn't know where I was going. Those words became the vehicle that drove my spirit forward and made it stay alive. I had spent more than a month in the forest when I finally ran into people again. The only living things I had met were monkeys, snakes, wild pigs, and deer, none of which I could have a conversation with. Sometimes I watched the little monkeys practice jumping from tree to tree or watched the curious eyes of a deer that sensed my presence. The sounds of branches snapping off trees became my music. There were certain days when the sound of the branches breaking made a consistent rhythm that I would enjoy very much, and the sonority of it would echo for a while and would gradually fade into the depths of the forest. I was walking slowly, staggering from hunger, back pain, and fatigue when I ran into some young people my age at an intersection where two paths merged into one. I was wearing a pair of trousers I had recently found hanging on a pole in an abandoned village. They were extremely big for me, so I tied them with ropes so they wouldn't fall off while I walked. We all arrived at the junction at the same time, and upon seeing each other, we became paralyzed with fear. As I stood there, unable to run, I recognized a few of the faces and I smiled to break the tension and uncertainty. There were 6 boys, and 3 of them, Alhaji, Musa, and Kene, had attended Centennial Secondary School with me in Matrujong. They weren't close friends, but the 4 of us had been flogged once for talking back to the senior prefect. We had nodded at one another after that punishment, which we all agreed was unnecessary. I shook hands with the boys. I could tell who was from what tribe by the marks on their cheeks and their features. Alhaji and Saidu were Timini, and Kene, Juma, Musa, and Moriba were Mende. They told me they were heading for a village called Yile in Bont District that they had heard was safe because it was occupied by the Sierra Leone armed forces. Quietly, I followed them as I tried to remember all their names, especially the names of the faces I recognized among them. I walked in the back, creating a little distance between us. I began to realize how uncomfortable I felt being around people. Kene, who was older, perhaps 16, asked me where I had been. I smiled without answering. He tapped me on the shoulder as if he knew what I had experienced. "Circumstances will change and things will be fine. Just hold on a little more," he said, tapping my shoulder again and nodding. I responded with a smile. Once again, I was with a group of boys. This time, there were 7 of us. I knew this was going to be a problem, but I didn't want to be by myself anymore. Our innocence had been replaced by fear, and we had become monsters. There was nothing we could do about it. Sometimes we ran after people shouting that we were not what they thought, but this made them more scared. We hoped to ask people for directions, It was impossible. We had traveled for more than 6 days when we came in contact with a very old man who could barely walk. He sat on the veranda of a house in the middle of the village. His face was too wrinkled to still be alive, yet his dark skin was shiny and he spoke slowly, gobbling the words in his jaws before he let them out. As he spoke, the veins on his forehead became visible through his skin. Everyone ran when they heard of the seven boys on their way here. I couldn't run at all, so they left me behind. No one was willing to carry me, and I didn't want to be a burden, he said. We explained to him where we were from and where we wanted to go. He asked us to stay for a while and keep him company. You young fellows must be hungry. There are some yams in that hut over there. Can you boys cook some for me and yourselves? He politely asked. When we were almost finished eating the yams, he said slowly, My children, this country has lost its good heart. People don't trust each other anymore. Years ago, you would have been heartily welcomed in this village. I hope that you boys can find safety before this untrustworthiness and fear cause someone to harm you. He drew a map on the ground with his walking stick. This is how you get to Yile, he said. What is your name? Kene asked the old man. He smiled as if he knew that one of us would ask this question. There's no need to know my name. Just refer to me as the old man who got left behind when you get to the next village. He looked at all our faces and spoke softly with no sadness in his voice. I will not be alive to see the end of this war. So to save a place in your memories for other things, I won't tell you my name. If you survive this war, just remember me as the old man you met. You boys should be on your way. He pointed his staff toward the path that lay ahead of us. As we walked away, he erased the map with his foot and waved us off with a raised right hand and a nod. Before the village disappeared from our sight, I turned around to take one last look at the old man. His head was down and he had both hands on his staff. It was clear to me that he knew his days would soon be over and he didn't bother to be afraid for himself, but he was for us. Someone has started a rumor about the seven boys, us. Many times during our journey, we were surrounded by muscular men with machetes who almost killed us before they realized that we were just children running away from the war. Sometimes I look at the blade of the machetes and thought about how much it would hurt to be chopped with one. Other times, I was so hungry and tired that I didn't care. At crowded villages where we sometimes stopped to spend the night, the men stayed up to keep an eye on us. When we went to the river to wash our faces, mothers would grab their children and run home.